Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 2nd of November. This hour of the program, we're going to be looking at programs that are allowing many more minority students to do much better in high school and to start thinking about college as an alternative in their lives and something they can work to attain. We'll be talking about two programs, a program at Wisconsin Lutheran College based here in Milwaukee, which looks at working with students now from kindergarten through high school, working with parents, working with college environment, working specifically on math, science, and technology. We'll talk with the director of that program, Milton Cockcroft, a little bit later this hour. Steve Perry joining us, the first part of our program, founder of Capital Prep Magnet School, which is located in Hartford, Connecticut. He is the author of Man Up and an education contributor to CNN. Born to a teenage mom, he lived in public housing. He has said that he started the school because, you know, early on in his education, he was either going to be a principal or somewhere else because he spent a whole lot of time in the principal's office. He has done a great deal in this school. The school has 300 6th through 12th grade students, and it boasts a near 0% dropout rate. And Hartford is one of the lowest performing districts in Connecticut. It is the state with one of the largest achievement gaps between black and white students in the nation. Of course, Wisconsin is way up there, unfortunately, as well. Steve will be joining us, and then a little bit later on, Milton will join us. And our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you would like to send an email to the show, you can do that, and that's talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Steve Perry, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be back in Wisconsin. I was just there for the for Thursday and Friday.
You were? What were you doing here?
I was in Milwaukee speaking to two groups. On Thursday, I spoke to the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Black Educators. And then I spoke to another organization on Friday. I'm blanking on the name right now. I'm really apologize. It starts with a C. It'll come to me in a minute. Something like Catalyst or something like that.
Oh. Well, I hope you had a good time and that we were hospitable.
Very hospitable. I had some custard.
Somebody told you what you ought to eat when you were here.
It was delicious.
It is delicious, isn't it? It's our little secret here in the area. So, Steve Perry, you started this school. Why don't you start with your life? Because it's, you know, where you were really informs where you are now.
There's truth in that. I think what's most important about my life is that I'm a person who, like all of us, sees problems. We all see the same problems. We all walk past that piece of paper on the ground, in the street, on the sidewalk, or wherever it is. And some people pick it up. Some people step over it. Others will say that it's not their problem and that's something for them to pick up. So the problem that I saw was that our children, and that's not of any particular color or of community, but our children as American children are being undereducated by our public schools. The United States of America made it clear from 1954 onward that separate but unequal education is, in fact, unconstitutional, and thereby saying that all children, regardless of hue or economic background, gender, or any other characteristics that might separate them, have the constitutional right to access to an education. And in so saying that, it said that education is inherent to the humanity of people, much along the lines of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So I, like our founding fathers and by interpretation of the Supreme Court, believe that every single child should have access to a quality education.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because I've been given access and I know how it has changed my life.
Tell me about the school you've founded, how long it's been around, and the philosophy of the school, the Capital Preparatory Magnet School in Hartford, Connecticut.
It's a college preparatory school. It's a year-round college preparatory school. It began as a part-time, out-of-school program, an upward-bound program.
Hmm.
And what would happen would be we'd work all summer with our kids, or 6 weeks with our kids, getting them back together, getting their confidence up in school, their interest up in school, and then by the end of the first week back in their school, it seemed like the air had all been out. In 5 days, 6 weeks' worth of work seemed to have gone down the drain. And at the end of one summer, a parent came to me and she said, she was so excited about how well her daughter had done. And she said, I've never seen my daughter do this well before. She doesn't like school. This isn't really school, she said. Well, it is, ma'am. We have teachers and there's books. It's a school. And she said, well, why is it that only rich kids get good schools then? That was more of an indictment than a question. I actually felt like she was in some way throwing me under the bus as part of the establishment.
Hmm.
My objective was to be an agitator to the system.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I don't know. And so she said, well, just as quickly she asked the first question, she said, well, why can't this program become its own school? And I didn't have an answer for that. So now I have an answer for both questions. It can become its own school, and rich kids are not the only ones to get access to a good school.
So you created a school, I've read, and tell me if it's different, with students, though, who have backgrounds similar to yours. A school that has incredibly high expectations for each and every student.
That is true. I am a member of a very good team of educators who saw problems and sought to correct them. And one of the problems that we saw were the low expectations that were heaped upon our children like a lead blanket. We saw how those who were held responsible for educating them up to the point that we got them, essentially told them, as long as you're a good kid, you'll get good grades. And they meant that. Come to school, don't disrupt too much, and you're at least going to get a C. And then, if you're a bad kid, you're going to get a bad grade. And that's clear, too. So what we did was we formed a school for students, many of whom are from historically disadvantaged populations. Over 60% of our students are low income, or 86% of them are Black or Latino. And we were going to beat the private schools. That was our plan. Our plan was to do everything we could to beat some of America's most elite and selective schools with a group of children and faculty who had never seen an urban school be successful in their lives.
Hmm. It's not a huge school. You have 300 students. We talk frequently about educational issues, Steve Perry. Is the size important here?
To some degree, our school size when we're fully enrolled, we're building a new building now, will be 700, 100 per grade, growing at about 80 a clip.
Oh, my.
What's important, though, is that our school is designed to succeed. It's a year-round school. There is no reason why in the United States of America in 2009, why children are having the summers off. It's absolutely absurd. Serves no academic purpose. The only purpose it serves is for the teachers themselves, which unfortunately is driven by the teachers' union. They are the ones who keep kids home during the summer. So there's the first part. The second part is our school is designed to be successful because we make children feel like somebody is watching them at worst and supporting them at best.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that because we have every teacher serves the role of teacher and advisor, and we often work to get them to coach. This is what in a prep school they call a triple threat. Each teacher has more than one responsibility, thereby allowing the teacher to know the child in and outside of the classroom. And it's with that 360-degree understanding of the child that they can affect change in that child. When the wealthiest among us select that model, it's got to be telling us something. When people who could choose other choose that, and we ought to listen to why that's
right.
Why they're making that choice. And finally, our school is is successful in large part because we have faculty who are committed to the mission. And that's really important. Again, when you go visit some of America's most elite private schools, what you'll find is that everybody knows that these kids are going to go beyond college and be successful. It's a fait accompli. There's no discussion about it. There are no goofy signs around campus talking about be all you can be. There's no picture of Oprah or Bill Cosby with a book talking about read. None of that stuff. It's embedded in the stones on campus. You can talk to a groundskeeper and he or she will treat you as if you are someone who's important, or you could talk to the secretary, or you can meet with the teachers, or whatever it is that you need to do, they will all let you know that you are at a place where children are learning to be educated and educators.
Mm-hmm. And this is astounding to me. Every graduating member of the senior class goes to a four-year college.
Yes.
Wow. That's pretty significant.
It's what we're designed to do. If we were designed to teach children to drive trucks, then when we were done, they should know how to drive a truck. School's designed to send children to college. So that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
There are colleges all over this great nation of ours, four-year colleges, for whatever it is the child is interested in. The objective then becomes to make sure that happens. Something that I learned when I was visiting these private schools before we opened this school, before we opened Capital Prep, was I'd sat down. I had always thought that there's some sort of skullduggery going on where how do they get these kids into college? What are they doing? They must be cheating. And that's what everyone always says about us. Well, there are those who say that about us. We have an open admissions policy. We have a lottery system. I don't pick our kids.
Hmm.
And even if I could, I probably would have picked the ones I get anyway through the lottery. It doesn't matter to me. We'll mm-hmm. take whoever we get.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, when I was visiting these schools, what I would find to my surprise, was that the kids were not smarter than my kids in the upper bound program that we were running. And some of them had SATs or ACTs that were about where mine were. You know, they were white, where mine were not. But person to person, my kids could hang with them.
Mm-hmm.
My kids could do what they did. I didn't feel like at any point along the way they were going to overtake my kids. And that was stunning to me because I thought, kids like these. I remember this one little girl at a prep school in Connecticut that I went to visit. I went and I saw her SAT score, and I thought, wow, that's her score combined? Whew. I have a bunch of kids whose scores are higher than those. But back at their schools, they're getting steered to go to community college or no college at all or the military.
Mm-hmm.
When they could be on a four-year college campus, whereas this girl she had done two interviews with two different colleges, both of whom essentially said, you're in.
Hmm.
And she didn't have a profile that was any more compelling than the profile of the children with whom I had worked. In fact, I believe that mine were more compelling because they had traveled a longer distance and the road was more winding and treacherous. And so the story was more interesting.
Yeah. So tell me, Steve Perry, what would be the basic differences between your preparatory magnet school in Hartford and some of the other public schools in Hartford? What is it about you? What is it about the instruction? Because you say the students come from all over. What makes all of these students so successful? How do you build them up so that they feel as though they're, of course, we're going to be successful?
The faculty.
Hmm.
They don't come in here telling me what their job is not. They don't come in here. And I talk often about the teachers' unions because they are at the root of the failure of our public school system. They are. Their calendar, their lowered expectations for teacher output have deeply wounded the American education system. Schools that don't have these limitations typically are doing just fine. In many cases, many of the members of these organizations end up sending their own children to schools out other than these. So it's like going to someone's house, and they're serving up a hamburger. And you say, aren't you going to have one? They say, I'll eat that mess.
But teachers' unions have also helped elevate the profession of teaching, don't you think?
No.
You don't think so?
Absolutely not. Because when you do, you allow teachers to be assessed based upon their productivity. when you elevate a profession, you say that we are so good that we will allow you to evaluate us based upon that which we do. Not everyone gets a raise just because they made it through another year. Not everyone gets a raise even though the children's scores have gone down. Not everyone keeps their job even though 91% of a school have failed to meet the state's expectations. Say what you want about standardized tests, and I will say the same thing. Yes, of course, they are bought with limitations. But I don't know why a three-point shot is worth 3 points. I just know that's the rule right now. I don't know why a football field is 120 yards, but it is.
So how do you get your teachers?
We carved them out of the same, or we pulled them from the rubble of failed schools. Because even in failed schools, there are people who just love winning, who take winning personally, who care about children. I had a student teacher in here this morning, and he said, I'm failing. And I said, well, because you're saying that to me, I know you're succeeding. Because you care enough after 4 weeks to think that teaching might not be for you, it means that you are an introspective man, that you're asking the right questions. He wants to know why the kids are not interested in what he's teaching. Whereas many teachers just say, hey, it's their problem. I taught it. They didn't learn it. And there's no way when you have the behemoth, the political juggernaut of teachers' unions, many principals are just scared. I'm not, but many of them are. Many of them are afraid to fire. I'm not, but many of them are. Now, that's their problem. They need to get unscared in a hurry because that's their job, or they need to find another job. But what we do at our school is we make sure that people understand, if you come here, you're going to work harder than you've ever worked in your life. I don't care if you dig ditches. You ain't never going to work this hard.
Steve,
but you're going to win.
Steve Perry is our guest. We're going to take phone calls for you, Steve, in just a moment. Founder of Capital Preparatory Magnet School, which is located in Hartford, Connecticut. It's been around for 4 years now and is expanding, as you heard him say, rapidly, starting with 300 6th through 12th grade students. They're now building a new building and up to 700. They boast a near 0% dropout rate. And this is in a district that's considered one of the lowest performing districts in the state of Connecticut, with a very large achievement gap. It's a year-round school that is more than 80% Black and Latino. Every graduating member of the senior class goes to a four-year college. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us tomorrow for our 9 o'clock hour is former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. She has it's not only beautiful, it's a really interesting book about the pins that she has worn, and also it looks heavily at politics, but she makes a statement with her jewelry. She'll talk about that in Afghanistan and all kinds of issues. She's a delightful woman. So tomorrow at 9, Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. We take a few phone calls. Joining us in just a couple minutes, we'll be speaking with the director of the Pathways to College program established here in Milwaukee a couple of years ago. The director of that program will be joining us momentarily. We'll take a couple phone calls for Steve Perry, starting with Ken from Milton. Hi, Ken.
Hello. I'm wondering why the guest thinks we need an elitist system. The American school system teaches or educates everybody, and I'm wondering who don't you let through the door? Who do you not let through the door? Thank you.
All right. Steve Perry?
I have no idea what he's talking about.
Well, I think that erroneously he believes that maybe you have a system that people can only get in if they have a certain grade point or whatever. You accept it's a lottery, you said, right? So the people who don't win the lottery don't get through the door.
Right. In fact, I am making it very clear that I have a problem with the fact that the only way that you can get access to a quality education is if you have the means to do so. I believe that every single child in the United States of America, and dare I say on earth, needs access to a quality education. It's the reason why people put their children on shaky rafts and put them in the back of containment carriers and children die trying to make their passage into this country. It is the reason why so many parents do things like put their children on a city bus and then so they can send them over to their cousin's house so they can catch a public school bus to go to a better school. It's it's absurd that children in towns such as Milwaukee have to hope to get into one of the good schools when all the schools should be good. If the money is paid by the taxpayers for a service, there shouldn't be good roads and good and bad roads. They're just roads. There shouldn't be good police officers for us or good firefighters for us. No more than there should be good teachers in schools. When the public pays it, it should be equal.
Thanks, Ken, for the call. Chris from Southwest Wisconsin. Hi.
I have a comment. I live in a very poor county in southwestern Wisconsin, and they implemented a new mathematics program that we've seen standardized test scoring going down for our students, and a group of parents requested the school board that there be a choice until we can have true reading as to which program would work better for our students across the board. And anyway, the school board ruled that if the parents chose to pay for their curriculum, get their own teachers, however they wanted to do it, that they would be allowed to do that within the framework of the public school system. You want to talk about elitist when there's tons of parents whose kids are struggling and can't afford to do that.
That's absurd, and that's where the problem lies. Let me make this clear, I am the biggest proponent for vouchers that you will ever meet. It's one of the reasons why when I spoke to both of the organizations, Catapult was the other organization. When I spoke to these two organizations in Milwaukee, I made it very clear to both of them, Milwaukee, we need you guys to be successful with vouchers so that we can have them throughout the country. We can't have a system in which you have charter schools and public schools both failing. That just can't do. We need to be able to show that there's some distance between one or the other. And I believe, if you believe in Pell Grants, you believe in vouchers. Student financial aid, you believe in vouchers. Medicaid, Medicare, all vouchers. Section 8, all vouchers. We believe in public vouchers, but for some reason, not enough of us believe in them in the public education sector. So when Wisconsin did what you guys did 20 years ago, people like me are excited about it because you guys get it. And I do think it's absurd when you were telling me, when the caller was talking about the math program, how do you even know that the teachers that they hired can operate the program? Just because you bought it doesn't mean somebody can use it. How many times have I bought electronics equipment that I never even know how to use because I don't understand it?
Thanks, Chris. We'll take one more phone call for you, Steve. Wayne from Holman. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Wayne.
Boy, I tell you, we need more pioneers like this gentleman. I'm really appreciating what he's saying. I'd like to, if I could, Kathleen, the National Education Association had their annual meeting in San Diego in July. And the general counsel, Bob Cannon's closing remarks to the NEA members were this, and I'm not opposed to NEA, but this scares me a little bit what he said. And I'm going to quote from Bob Cannon, "We have power because there are more than 3.2 million people in the NEA who are willing to pay us hundreds of millions of dollars in dues each year." He also goes on to explain that the NEA is effective, quote, "not because of our creative ideas, it is not because of the merit of our positions, it is not because we care about children. It is because we have a vision of a great, or a vision for a great public school for every child." And he's saying we don't have that. NEA and its affiliates are effective advocates because we have power. I'd like to have you comment on that, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And I'm telling you, the NEA and the AFT are the problem. The fact that they stand in the way of virtually every single form of educational reform that has been brought forward. Merit pay, they're against it. Charters, magnets, they're against them. Even though the community resoundingly supports these, they are against them in some states, fighting to the extent that they make them unconstitutional. I am saying that the problem with the NEA and the AFT is that they are not serving the children. They make it very clear. They are there for their members, who, by the way, are not children. So the voiceless in our community remain silent, and that's our children. There are very few issues that you're going to find people who come together from completely different political stripes, from the most right-wing Republican to the most left-wing Democrat, from the poorest black to the wealthiest white, where you look at the same issue and people come away with the same. People believe in America that you should have a choice. You should have a choice as to where you send your kids to school, whether you want to homeschool them or Catholic school, whether you want to send them to a big public school or a small magnet school. Each one of us believes that, yet and still, the juggernauts of the AFT and NEA have stood in the way, have stood in the doorway of progress, leaving us to huddle and hope that we get out. And I'm not scared of them. I know that there are more of us than there are of them. Their 3.2 million don't deal with the hundreds of millions of Americans who want a different way of using what typically is 85% of our local property taxes. 85%. And people don't also know that when you teach in a place where unions are the order of the day, you have to be a member of the union even if you don't want to. As a principal in Hartford, Connecticut, I have to be in a union. I'm in a union, even though I don't want to be.
Steve, thank you so much for being with us the first part of our show today. Thank you. Your time. Steve Perry, founder of Capital Preparatory Magnet School in Hartford, Connecticut, author of Man Up and education contributor to CNN. The school has been in existence for some 4 years, and they send almost every graduating member of the senior class to a four-year college. We're talking about, actually, Pathways to College. It's also the name of a Wisconsin Lutheran college program designed to aid low-income, first-generation college students with the potential to succeed in college. They have a pre-college enrollment, which is now starting in kindergarten. That program just started this fall. There's a parent component and a college component, the program concentrating on math, science, and technology. Milton Cockcroft is the director of Pathways to College. He worked for a number of years with AT&T before directing this program. He's a board member at Wisconsin Lutheran High School and also a past board member of Hope Schools. He is with us this hour to talk about their program, Pathways to College. And your phone calls will, whatever you were going to say for the last half hour, will be pertinent to this half hour as well. The number is 800-486-8655. Milton, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
This is a new program. Tell me what you decided was wrong where you needed to start a Pathways to College program.
Well, you know, as you stated, I was with AT&T for quite a few years. This is actually a call position to the college. So the college identified something that they saw that they needed to address, and I was called to kind of start this program. So it's not something that I necessarily seen that was wrong, even though I will say that I agree with just about everything Steve Perry just said. So there's a lot wrong that's out there.
Mm-hmm. You are working now, it expanded this fall to kindergarten students, is that right?
Well, the pre-college program or Pathways itself is broken out into four different components. You have your pre-college component where we start with sixth graders and we keep them until they graduate from high school. We have our parent component and our college component, you know, that's going to be in place to foster the success, you know, once they get there. But it's our Pathways Prospects program that just rolled out this fall, which handles our kindergarten through fifth graders.
Mm-hmm. And the goal of this is similar to perhaps what Steve Perry was doing in Hartford, to get students to understand college, to get ready for college, and ultimately to enter college.
Exactly. We focus on academic, social, spiritual, and making sure they have the financial resources to go on to a post-high school education. And just like Steve Perry started in the beginning with this Upward Bound program that he did over the summer, this is not too far off from that, only this program is year-round as well. And I say year-round with limited access to the kids, you know, and touch points. We do have a summer program that they attend, which is 2 weeks long. During the school year, they meet on our college campus one Saturday a month. We have our college prep center that they meet at once a week. And for our older kids in the program right now, because we have 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, our 7th and 8th graders also go one Saturday a month out to St. John's Military Academy for leadership training.
Mm-hmm. And these are students you've identified as, would they, most of them, be first-generation college students?
I say the majority of them are first-generation. Yeah. We partner with certain schools. We have 16 schools right now that we work with. We talk with the principal and the teachers. And they identify the families that they feel would benefit most from our program. And we come to the schools and they have to attend a mandatory presentation in order to take part in the program.
And who do you think would benefit most from your program?
And that is, you know, actually everyone would benefit from the program. I mean, we say we target first generation, but we do have those that aren't. I mean, you have parents that have college degrees that are out there, but they're so involved in their work and day-to-day activities that they still don't have the chance or opportunity to give their kids the necessary points that they need to go on and study skills and what they should be doing to go to the next level, because they're so involved in their own lives. So it's not just those first generations.
Mm-hmm. Is there an emphasis, I've read, on math, science, technology in the program?
Well, our goal is to identify the gaps and close those gaps. We know the core subjects of math, science, English, reading, that sort of thing. We want to make sure that kids aren't going into high school 2 and 3 grade levels behind, because then there's no way to make up that difference. And colleges are looking for those 4 years of math, English, and science and foreign languages as well. And if they're that far behind, they're not going to be meeting those minimal qualifications. So it's across the board, the core subjects that those kids need to focus on.
Mm-hmm. You also work with parents.
Yes, we have a very strong parent component. When our families come on board, they're asked to sign a covenant, which explains what we as an organization will provide, what our expectations are of the parents, of the student, and both the parent and the student signs that covenant. So our parents understand the commitment, they understand their commitment, and therefore, our parents are very involved in the program. They are on campus once a month when those kids are on campus in their own workshops, in life coaching, because it's not just about what they can do for their kids. A lot of these parents are working on their own lives. So we want to provide them a resource to help themselves out, to talk about their goals and aspirations, or the goals and aspirations they used to have or forgot about. So it's about helping them, because we know if we do that, they'll continue to push and help their kids move forward.
Mm-hmm. So the program's been around. You haven't had a graduating class yet, have you?
No. We started sixth grade. So this year we have sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. So we're going into our third year right now.
Mm-hmm. And then every year you add another group.
Every year we add a new sixth grade class. This year we added 79 new sixth graders to our program. Now, remember that we also are rolling out our Pathways Prospects program. So we added 36 new fifth graders to the program as well. Now, that program is less intensive than the pre-college component, but it gets those families acclimated to a college environment. It gets them to discussing and talking about, you know, college at the dinner table. So now it's just not a matter of conversation. It's a matter of, you know, interest and wanting to know more about it and ultimately pursuing that college education when the time comes.
Mm-hmm. Do you see this as a downfall of public schools in our state, that there aren't enough students who are minority students who are thinking about college track? Or do you see it as more a responsibility of colleges like yours to bring people along?
I would say more of a responsibility of the colleges, because I came up through a pre-college program called En-ROADS. And I would say that was a time where our public schools weren't as bad. So it's not necessarily a result of the downfall. It's just the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Are there other colleges doing this, or are you
there's a lot of colleges and standalone pre-college programs. You know, UW and Marquette, a lot of the UW universities have pre-college programs. Maybe not as structured the same way we are year-round. A lot of them may just do summer programs or Saturday programs or some type of combination. We just go an extra mile with what we do.
Mm-hmm. Our last guest, you heard some of what he said, really, and I'm sure I'm going to hear about this from a lot of listeners who are teachers, complained about the teachers' unions as being really the major problem in terms of problems with education. I would disagree with him on that. I think that they serve a strong purpose in terms of getting wages for people and having an organization. People like to really blast teachers, and it's an incredibly hard job, I think. I don't just think it's teachers' faults, because I think there are many of them among the best of us in society. But I'm wondering what you think about the reasons for this very, very large gap in education between minorities and non-minority students in the state, where public schools might be at fault, where parents might be at fault, because we keep living with it year after year after year, and it doesn't get any better. Should we put blame somewhere?
Well, you know, if you put blame somewhere, you have to put it everywhere. I mean, the teachers, meaning the schools, the parents. You know, I grew up in a time where I think a lot of the responsibility takes place at home. Mm-hmm. So you have teachers now, you know, dealing with students, and these students are bringing a lot of baggage to school with them. So a teacher is trying to educate, and they're having a hard time doing it because of the disruption in class. And it may not be disruption that the students want to, but if they're coming to school hungry, if they're coming to school tired because of whatever is taking place in the home, you know, it's hard to educate someone under those circumstances. So the teachers have that to deal with. But the parents, you have kids raising kids now. So if they don't know what to do, how are they going to instruct or teach their kids what to do? And so you have that to deal with now. And I believe that's why we wanted such a strong parent component as a part of our program, to show them, at least those that don't know, what parents should be doing.
Yeah. Let's take phone calls for you. 800-486-8655. Kathy from Eau Claire is on the line. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I was wondering if this gentleman, does he take on students that are, like, totally drained? They have no motivation. They're very resentful, angry. I mean, I've seen them as young as second and third grade that it's very, very, very difficult to get these students motivated. By the time they get to high school, they're almost gone.
Are you a teacher, Kathy?
No, I just work in the foster care system.
Oh, okay.
Kathy, you know, I agree with you 100%. And yes, and the short answer is yes, we do. But as I stated earlier, we partner with certain schools and we add a new two or three new schools each year. So we don't necessarily select the kids that take part in our program. We work with the principals and the teachers, and they identify the families and invite them to our presentation. But you're right. You know, we see that as well. And those, you know, those are the kids we talk about, you know, at Pathways. Those that make it hard for you to love them, you just have to love them even harder, even more, to keep encouraging them to be successful and that they can accomplish things, because they're probably hearing so much of the opposite at home in their communities that they need to do that. And we try to incorporate things to make education fun so they're not, you know, so angry and against education and the learning process.
Yeah. Do you think, and this is not directed at minority students, but at all students, that there's this thing among young people today that it's not be black or white or not Asian, because I think the Asian families have a different way of raising children, and there's a great respect for education. But it seems to me as though a lot of young people today think that being really smart just isn't cool. It's just not cool. And I know that's kind of a general statement, but I'm wondering if you see some of that really hitting the books and being on the debate team and using the mind in all kinds of ways, who cares?
You know, we see a lot of that. And I think it's easy to say, you know, kids don't think it's cool, but I'll give you an example. We had a student that's a part of our program. Grades have slipped tremendously. So myself and my assistant director scheduled a time to go to the school and sit down with this student and talk about what's going on, because they're a bright student. And they literally told us that their peers were making fun of them because they were so smart and doing well. Mm. So we had to, you know, we had to create this list of pros and cons and show them all the great things that they do and their personality and all of this stuff, and how it doesn't matter what other people say and how these things will get them a lot further. So it really hit home when a student told us that.
Right. Well, it says something that you went to the student as well and talked to him or her.
Well, thank you.
It's nice, yeah. So welcome more phone calls, and we'll do it in a moment. 800-486-8655. This part of our program, the Wisconsin Lutheran College Pathways to College program, designed to aid low-income first-generation college students with the potential to succeed in college. And we're speaking this hour with Milton Cockcroft, who is the director of the program. Our number, a couple lines are open, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest tomorrow at 9 o'clock is former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. She's an absolutely delightful woman, and she has a new book, kind of an unusual book. But you notice, I'm sure, when she was Secretary of State that she wore these pins. Well, many of them were extremely pointed, and she wore them to make statements as she traveled the world in diplomatic positions. Some of them were for fun. Some of them were telling leaders of foreign countries, you better shape up. So she's with us tomorrow. We go back to phone calls now for Milton. Chad from Menominee is next. Hi, Chad.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Similar question to a few other callers. I'm wondering, how do you cultivate the curiosity that's needed to move on to the college level and to also see the importance of going to college where students of color, I think, face barriers that other students don't have to face, both environmentally and society in general, which I imagine could be tremendous to work against. I'm wondering if your guest could talk a little bit about what's needed to work against those barriers, especially for students of color. And I'll take my response off air.
Thank you, Chad.
Great question, Chad. I think one of the things that I feel is important is having them have the opportunity to visit a college campus or just be in that environment. That's why we think it's important for our kids to be on our campus once a month, to be around college students, you know, talking to them, encouraging them, sharing with them what college is all about. They work with our professors. So these students now have an idea of what a college environment is about, what classes are like. You know, when you're talking about inner city or minority students, a lot of them have never been to a college campus. Unless they're involved in some type of pre-college program, they haven't been to a college campus. So when by the time they become juniors and seniors in high school, you're asking them to, select a college. A counselor is talking to them about, you know, going through this selection process, and it's still foreign to them. They don't know what a college is all about. They just see what they see on TV during the football games or, you know, during commercials. I think they have to be introduced to that environment early on. And this is particularly if they have parents that haven't gone to college.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Mary Ann from Wausau. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for putting a kind of a correction on your previous speaker and for teachers, and I would add to it for the NEA and WEAC, because I don't think he really understands what they do support. But for your current guest, I want to say that my husband and I visited Tuskegee Institute a couple of years ago and took a tour, and we were waiting for the tour group to get together, I was expecting it was going to be high school age students, and we were the only people not of color in the group. When they came, they were young children. There were a couple about high school age, and their parents and even grandparents, and I think it really spoke to what your guest is now saying. They wanted them to see this campus and know what it was all about early on and be talking about it in their entire family.
Oh, that's nice to have the whole families come. And that's your approach as well. You're
absolutely
dealing with a whole family.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mary Ann, for your call. Mary is next from Eau Claire. Hi, Mary.
Yes. Hi, this is Mary. I have to go quick. In fact, in 3 minutes here, I'm meeting with 30 pre-college students. Myself, I'm sitting in the school parking lot.
Okay.
So my comment is, I've been working with pre-college low-income students for over 20 years. Started out near Chicago with the director of Upper Bound. I now work for Wisconsin DPI, Wisconsin Equal Opportunity Programs. We serve middle school through high school. And honestly, having worked in these programs for so long, with all the different ethnic groups in inner city and urban and rural, you know, the ones who fall through the cracks, the ones who make it, when you talk college to them and you do the tours and stuff, they're grabbing it. But over these years, seeing the kids who still are dropping through the cracks are the ones, when you say college, it is so ambiguous to them, even if they've been on campus. It's almost like they need to find their purpose, their career early on, that it becomes meaningful, that they walk on the campus with the purpose of where they're going in life. A lot of times we talk the talk about getting the financial aid and getting them, you know, here's your future and income, and but they still need to be able to hold a hammer or still need to say, this is market, this is what I love, to find their kind of niche in life, because it's the ones who, you know, life whips them around and they haven't found their purpose yet.
Thank you very much, Mary, for your call.
I think Mary hit some the nail right on the head in a lot of respects there. You know, we actually are partnering with Cardinal Stretch, another college, to work with our kids on identifying their vocation. So that is true, you know, not just introducing them to the college environment, but determining what skills and strengths they bring to the table and what areas of vocation that they're interested in and that their gifts will allow them to pursue. So that's all a part of it.
Yeah. We go next to Steve from Milwaukee. Hi, Steve.
Hi, I'll be real quick. I just think that all of the work you do with kids isn't going to mean anything if you don't increase the number of chairs in colleges, increasing the number of colleges. If every kid got an A in every topic all the way through high school, where are the colleges for them to go to?
The colleges in terms of what?
Well, there aren't enough.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's still on a merit system that you get into college, depending on the grades you had in high school. But if everybody became an A student, is there enough? Are there enough college chairs for everybody? I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, you know, that would be a great problem to have if everybody got A's in high school. Colleges that are looking to increase their population, that's one of the drawbacks. They're not getting enough students that are interested or have meeting the qualifications to warrant them building additional buildings and study areas or what have you. So that would be a great problem to have, and I think colleges would expand quite rapidly if that was the issue.
Mm-hmm. You're also working with, this is a pretty comprehensive program, you're working with other community organizations as part of Pathways.
Yes, I don't believe in reinventing the wheel. We have partnerships with the Milwaukee Urban League that works with our kids on life skills. We have partnerships with an organization called Know Thyself, which works with our students on things like manners, etiquette, dressing for success. We have partnerships with organizations like Stillwater's Collections, doing creative writing and things like that. So, you know, across the board, and again, St. John's Military Academy and their cadets working with our kids on leadership and what it takes to become good leaders, and the college, you know, the partnership with, you know, Wisconsin Lutheran College, with Cardinal Stretch, and working with our kids on the vocational aspect. So it's really a collaboration of people working with these kids to reach those goals.
And tell me, I forgot to ask this earlier, why the focus on math, technology, and science? Is that where the jobs are, do you see, or is that where the skills are needed?
Well, that's where the greatest deficiency is that we're seeing in math and science and the reading areas. And I mean, obviously, our country is falling so far behind when it comes to other countries in those areas that's an area that we just know we need to pick up the pace in.
Mm-hmm. How will you know if you've been successful, Milton?
Well, you know, right now, this early on, our success is really coming from a lot of feedback from our parents and kids. You know, we have parents telling us that, you know, this program, you know, is a tremendous asset to both them and their kids, that they never really would have thought their child would have taken a greater interest in education. We have kids saying that they had never thought about college, and now they're thinking about college. And these are 6th, 7th, and 8th graders now, remember. So, and we're not even talking high schoolers yet. So that's our gauge right now. And we're starting to gather those grades from the schools. So as we identify those grades and the gaps and start working with the students to close those gaps, you know, our success will then become those grades as well, where the ultimate success is those kids going on to college.
Mm-hmm. And how many students do you have in the program?
We have 138 students. And that does not include, that's in our pre-college program, and then we have another 36 students in our Pathways Prospects, our kindergarten through fifth grade, which are just fifth graders right now.
Yeah. Thanks, Milton, so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Kathleen.
Milton Cockcroft, our guest this half hour, he is the director of the Pathways to College program at Wisconsin Lutheran College, based here in Milwaukee. We also thank Steve Perry for being with us the first part of our program. Thanks to Jalema Noel and Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Jalema Noel for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. We're with you again tomorrow. I want to remind you that this show is now on Facebook, and we're playing around with it to add more features and information. So if you go to WPR.org and then find my name, Kathleen Dunn, you can become a fan. And I think eventually we ought to be able to talk to each other that way, which would be fun. Be with you again tomorrow with former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright joining us at 9 o'clock. She's a real treat, so be sure you listen to that. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.